This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Mike Beats.
And we are going to try to have all the volumes of all the voices be equal this time. I don't make any promises, but we're actually going to try to improve the quality of what we're doing. So bear with us. We're still learning as we go along. Tonight we're going to talk about potpourri, because we have a lot of things that we want to talk about. We have a little agenda that we work on during the week. And the first thing that we're going to pull out of...
All right, just fess up. We didn't finalize an agenda, okay?
Well, we have...
Trying to make this sound so fancy.
No, we have an agenda of like things I just keep writing down that we ignore.
That's the fair
week
enough,
after
fair
week.
Enough.
Okay, that's the agenda. Anyhow, the first thing in our potpourri, tonight is the posting of brackets at tournaments, which we thought was absolutely the most uncontroversial thing in the universe until we started talking about 2 minutes ago amongst ourselves. So anyhow, just to bring people up to speed on what we're doing, we started doing this late last year, but literally after every round, we post the results from the previous round right out of TRPC, the check sheet that we also use so that somebody goes over and double checks the ballots. We always get some kids to double check everything. Well, we post that sheet where everybody can see it so they can find out exactly where they are throughout the entire tournament. And
let me interrupt. Not exactly where they are, because we could post out round by round the contestants in order, and we don't. So I think it just is interesting to know that the check sheet doesn't actually tell you your minute by minute seed. And I think
at Blake, we post the teams in order beginning at round two, only for coaches to see those. So a coach could have some autonomy in deciding whether or not they want their students to know exactly where they are.
Why would they want to know where they are as the tournament progresses? I mean, you know what your record is, so.
Well, because I think, with speaker points especially, it's sort of relative. I mean, especially in LD, you could be getting straight 28s and still not clear at the Glenbrooks. So,
which is an issue in and of itself, of course.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, I think that it adds a realistic, where you are, because speaker points and your record are relative only to the other people in the tournament. So,
well, before, when we were talking about this, you brought up the issue that we're publishing the thing straight out of the machine, so we're showing people's speaker points. And Mike, you were saying that it was possible that people might actually start doing evil things once they know what somebody else's points are to try to help their own team. And that astounds me that people would actually do something like that.
I'm not saying that it's a real problem. I'm just saying that it's, I guess it could be a potential concern that, I judge or John judges one of my debaters that gives him a 26 and I'm like, I got a 26. And the next round they judge a Bronx kid and I'm like, well, apparently John thinks 26 is an okay number of speaker points to give, so I'm going to give a 26. So I think that there's definitely, I wouldn't say definitely. It would be unfortunate if it were used as a way to potentially retaliate or to try to help your own kids do well, just because at tournaments like Yale or the Glenbrooks or any number of tournaments where the break can be kind of brutal in terms of speaker points, if you see that, other kids with similar records are getting are drawing slightly better points, you might adjust down a little bit, or you might mid-tournament change your speaker point scale to try to adjust it to what the rest of the tournament is doing. But by that point, it could be a little bit too late. I'm just saying that those sorts of things could influence, if not directly change someone's speaker points or their speaker point scale just by looking at other things. I will say one thing that I do think is kind of cool that, and I don't know if they do it at the Harvard tournament in LD, but I know that Stefan Bouchard was posting, at least in policy, he was posting all the pairings, the tabroom copy of the pairings, so it showed everyone's record.
Okay.
Right on there.
I want to actually say that I don't like that, and I'll tell you why I don't like that. You're still talking about like when it says like suppose Harvard Westlake versus Bronx Science, like the 5050 round. We're talking the same thing, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, a couple things about why I'm not sure that I like that. I think that if anything is going to change the way people might judge, it is seeing that you are judging horrible rounds, or you know what you would consider to be the horrible rounds in a horrible bracket. Yes, likeliness is you probably already know that that's the bracket you're judging in if you're one of those kinds of judges who would really take that into account. But I think advertising to the world who is judging the down whatever rounds and may have some effect on that person, right? They may already go in expecting it to be poor and adjust their speaker points accordingly. I feel like there's something, you know, at least. And maybe this is the difference for me posting contestants in order, posting round by round. I mean, you could stand there, right? And I'm sure, you know, obviously some kids do, and stand there and like reconstruct. Let's see who's down six right now, right? But I feel like having that on the schematic itself makes it so automatically everyone knows who's down six. Does that make any sense, or not really? Maybe that's just mixed up in my mind.
Well, I mean, it means that the judge doesn't have to do an extra step to figure out who.
But I don't think that all judges, right? I think, like I said, I think
well,
some judges
I think
do
you're
that.
Right. I think most judges don't go and look.
Sure, and I think especially at a tournament that suppose uses mutual preferences or some other preference system, if you are not the preferred judge and you are judging now you're judging the down whatever brackets, that's just reinforcing to you that you are judging the quote unquote less important or you know meaningless rounds and whatnot. And I feel like that perhaps is not a good thing.
Well, this actually relates to another topic on the legendary agenda, which is something we've touched on in the past, which is open tab. You know, I mean, so we're saying here that we're not telling the judges what position they're in. And, of course, with LD, it's usually double flights. Mm-hmm. So, it's in a way you can tell when you're watching the round, but you certainly don't know going in. But, I mean, we're in this situation of more and more passing along more and more information to everybody outside of the tap room and trying to be as transparent as possible. But at some point, and what you're saying now, I mean, you can think about those arguments about the judges and everything, starts to apply to LD and starts to apply. We're letting judges know. I mean, how many judges who really suck know that everybody thinks they really suck? I mean, I really don't know this. I mean, are they delusional, or are they? Do they just go and just get progressively more depressed because they're not, judging good rounds or tough rounds or something like that? I have no idea what the judges are thinking, and do we really want them to know that everyone, you know, to confirm to them that everyone thinks?
Well, just because you get an 0-4 round doesn't mean that you are an unpreferred judge,
right? And I'm not, and I didn't mean to imply that you are, although I think that some people would
interpret
it that way.
Well, in policy, it does. I mean, if you're getting an 0-4 round in policy, it's not like you have double flights. The way TRPC works, for those who, you know, kids, whatever, don't see it, it'll put a judge in a 4-0 and an 0-4.
Yeah, when I usually get rid of all that first.
Yeah, we take it. Yeah, but the way it comes out.
Right, that's right.
So if you're not adjusting, and we do the same thing, we will adjust if we have the resources to do it. But the natural thing is, so you'll go in, you'll have, and usually, by the time, if we're talking 4-0 and 0-4, and also a high-low in the bracket, these, at least the 4-0 round is pretty good, but fairly, you know, predetermined. Mm-hmm. And the 0-4 round just makes your head hurt kind of thing. And so you get these two things at the same time. But I'm just thinking, I mean, there's other things too. I mean, there's the amount of information that I want to send out to the world. I mean, at some point, I don't want to send out information that hurts somebody. I don't want to hurt them competitively. I don't want to hurt them personally.
Right. Like, and I think putting records next to your name explicitly on the pairing where everyone is going to see it, somehow that rubs me differently than everything else. Both because I think there's some internal message it's sending the judge, even if it's not, wow, I'm not preferred, or wow, I'm judging an unimportant round. It's, oh, wow, I'm judging two kids who are out of the tournament, so it doesn't really matter as much this round, right? Or it doesn't, my speaker points need not be whatever they were before and whatnot. And I would hope judges don't feel that way, but I have the suspicion that some of them do. And yeah, I don't know. That's my feeling.
I'd be willing to say that when we publish these things, we don't have to publish. Well, the speaker points are right there. There's really no, short of going in, right, and literally like crossing out all the speaker points, which would take forever. There is no way of just like covering half the sheet or something. Say, well, here's the win and here's the loss. Because, yeah, I don't believe that everybody's out there being venal and doing this kind of stuff. But I know for a fact that there have been people in the activity who've gone around giving the best people the worst points they could so that their own team would survive. And this has been very rare, and it's usually not coaches or judges, but it's like parents who've traveled a lot and stuff like that. And, you know, so and it's been known to happen. So anything that, you know, just removes whatever temptation might be.
I mean, I should know that.
Alternatively, having that data out there means that someone can be like, wait a minute. You're giving kids that are 0-4 30s, but you're giving kids that are 4-0 26s to that judge. I mean, it sort of has the accountability on the other side, too.
But except our tab room's really going to overrule.
Yeah, we're not enforcing we're not going to overrule them. We're not enforcing anything. We have the most marginal enforcement in the tab room of anything.
No, I'm not saying as an enforcement mechanism. I'm saying just as a community check. Just like if I know that what I do is going to be out in the open, I'm probably less likely to do shady stuff, right?
Well, I'm less worried about the shady stuff to the 4-0s and more worried about treating the 0-4s like total crap. I don't know. That's my gut instinct.
Well, most
kids on the other...
know. I mean, in a world where we have disclosure, right, of decisions, people know when they're 0-4.
They know, right, but they know, but they don't know that their next judge is going to know is my concern. Right?
Well, the next judge really doesn't. I mean, in the normal run, at least what we're doing, the judge doesn't know because the judge isn't looking that far ahead, unless we do what Stefan does.
I do want to say this about the thing about the posting of the records next to the school names.
On the pairings.
In my mind, on the pairings, yeah. And in my mind, if I have to make that concession to have transparency in virtually everything else, I'm okay with that. If people somehow feel that that's totally inconsistent with the other arguments I would make in terms of transparency in other parts of the tab room stuff, I just feel like there's something unsettling about seeing your record next to your name. What about in a pull-up round, right? So you've got a 4-0 hitting a 3-1, and then a judge who maybe is less experienced sees that and is like, oh, well, one person here is better than the other person, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, obviously, I think those things are going to happen on a regular basis? No, because I think enough people know, you know, what a pull-up is, but not everybody does, right? And I feel like stuff like that looks a little
yeah, I don't necessarily believe that we need to have 100% open tab for a variety of reasons. I think what we need to have is enough information that it makes sense to give out, and some information, no, it really is for the tab room. I mean, I don't know what that information is. It just seems to me that there probably is information like that I just don't want.
Let me sort of turn back to the very first thing we said about the bracket, which is supposedly not controversial, and I'll say what my thoughts on this remote, because I think that there are different reasons to disclose information and have that kind of transparency, right? Posting the bracket, I think, is something that levels the playing field. And I say this
by the way, we're talking now after
So the preliminary rounds are over.
In the elimination, right. We're talking about the elimination.
Bracket. The elimination rounds are beginning now, and you have posted the bracket. Now, I see two big reasons to post the bracket. One is that at the 40th annual New York City Invitational, I'm going to print out a gigantic bracket and give it to the winner. But anyway, that could be one reason. But the other reason...
Where does that take place, John?
At the Bronx High School of Science. But anyway...
the Bronx High School.
Indeed. Is that where you coach?
Believe it or not.
Do they pay you for that? Go ahead.
Well, I should probably not... Well, anyway, okay.
They don't.
So that could be one reason. You could have the big exciting bracket and it makes debaters feel more like athletes and then they feel really cool. But the bigger reason is that I think posting the bracket for that is a very good kind of transparency. A transparency that serves a leveling the playing field kind of function. So at Bronx Science, I have a very large team. And when we roll into a tournament like Ridge, I'm going to use Ridge as an example since it's coming up down the road, right?
How many entries are you going to have?
We're going to have 12 varsity LD entries at a minimum, I think.
And I'll
so that's
have
huge.
Two or three.
Okay. Right. So we'll use that as an example, right? So Bronx Science clear. Let's say Bronx Science doesn't have the best weekend ever, and we only clear a small part of that entry. But Hen Hut has a great weekend, right? And clears most of its entry. Now, despite the fact that we didn't have a great weekend initially, I now am in a great position in the elimination rounds because I can send all my kids in to watch other rounds, right? Jim can't do that if he has a smaller group at Henhood. And those kinds of scenarios are very real. They play out themselves all the time. You know, I know some people think that prepping out is the worst thing in the universe and scouting is the worst thing in the universe. But the reality is that unless you close the elimination rounds or do what the NCFL does and prevent flowing in the elimination rounds, right? I mean, you're that's apparently a rule.
There's a rule you can't. I mean,
you cannot flow in the elimination.
The judges can flow.
The judges presumably have the option.
You know, there
to
are
flow.
People that think that's a rule at NFL too. I had a guy who.
It is not the rule at the NFL.
I had a guy who collected the flows after the round, after an Elo round at NFL.
So the point is that a large team has an immediate advantage, right? Because if we don't have the bracket, we can say, okay, everybody just go to a different round, right? And now we're going to get everybody's cases. On the other hand, the other kind of advantage is if you have a coach like me or like Jim or like Beats, right, who know enough about tabbing and are like in the loop enough that they can sort of roughly figure out where everybody is in the out rounds, you also have an increased opportunity to strategically send different kids to watch rounds. And again, these kinds of things happen all the time. So when I debated on a very small team, and I know that from that perspective, having a bracket and I know quite a few smaller school coaches who would agree with me on this, having the bracket out there makes all information available to everyone at the same time. So now a team that only has a couple of kids there knows exactly what rounds they can go watch and who's going to debate who next, right? And then the advantage that Bronx Science would have it from sheer numbers sheer numbers of people who are there debating or coaching or whatever and can go see rounds, that advantage is taken away. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that completely. I agree with the logic of what you're saying. I mean, I'm a singleton. I mean,
right.
We have certain singletons that go. I mean, I'm sorry, they're going to be disadvantaged to a certain extent anyhow, except they're going to have friends, and their friends will help them out and all this kind of stuff. But at the point where you have three or four times as many people and can randomly go around everywhere and find out what and we see this in certain tournaments where during the preliminary rounds, there's scouts out there finding out what the major, you know, if you have major people and there's these operations that all have major people and they all have scouts, okay, fine. You know, that's the way they work because they can. Well, they can, so they can. But, I mean, you know, eliminating this advantage, because that is a raw, unquestionable advantage. You know, especially during prelims. But at least if we can remove that advantage in elims, we have a better situation, which I guess goes back to what.
That's why we should just have a case
doing,
list.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
No, but I agree. I mean, if you believe in any form of transparency in terms of case lists and whatnot, it is logical that you would also be in favor of something like a bracket. And admittedly, most people.
I wouldn't who think are anyone. I think that the opposite is probably less. More
right.
common
and
where people don't.
And I agree, and I think that people who are strongly in favor of brackets but not in favor of at least some form of a case list should probably think that through, right? Or think out what that argument, what that exactly means, right? Now, one thing I do want to say is that I think that it is important with the knowledge of the bracket and whatnot that there are people who really aren't opposed to this, and I have never really understood the argument. I think that those people need to understand what the goal is for posting the bracket, right? The goal is not let's have more prepping out. I mean, there is prepping out. You know, that exists independently of the bracket. The goal of the bracket is let's equalize things as much as possible.
Right. Yeah, it's not to say, okay, now you never did this before, go prep out. I mean, I've not been in this activity where there was not prepping out.
Sure.
Well, and it also serves the purpose of being able to pick, like, the night before who you're going to spend your time prepping on. I mean, if you know who you're going to hit in the morning,
right? And that's,
you know,
actually that's a perfect example of another way that it equalizes things. Because if at bump, Bronx Science treasures the bump tournament, and it's actually the only tournament we come to all year with all of our coaching staff. Right now, if I didn't know if the bump schedule is set up a little differently, right? Or even the way it's set up, right? There's a break between eliminations a brief break between the prelims and the eliminations. I could theoretically, all of the coaches at Bronx Science can can start working immediately and prepping with the kids on any number of theoretical cases, right? And because we have more people there, again, we can do more prep work, even if it's not a matter of scouting, like Beats is saying, right? And it's just thinking about responses to arguments. At least now everyone knows, okay, here's who I'm going to debate, right? So now this is who I'm going to start thinking about instead of worrying with the other
without
school.
The bracket, you're forced to randomness. I mean, there's always going to be certain advantages.
And you're forced to not know, and you're forced to spend all night prepping. I mean, this is just a side story, but at the Meadows, we knew that we were going to hit Brentwood in the quarterfinal round the next day. So at 2 a.m., we called over to their hotel room and said, "Do you guys just want to flip now so we can decide what, you know, so we can prep the side that we know we're going to be in the morning?" They said no. And in response, we didn't flip then until both debaters were sitting down and the judges were ready to go.
We had this problem at a very similar thing, and we felt very differently about it, which was at Princeton, our brackets got released. The pairing got released in the night.
Sure.
And our problem with that was, okay, now people know who they're going to debate, and they're just never going to sleep because they're going to spend all night like prepping for that person. And in fact, that's exactly what happened.
I think that's the opposite, though.
Yeah,
if we didn't know that we were going to hit Brentwood, we would have prepped every single person left in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think. I guess the bigger problem with releasing pairings the night before, the actual pairings, is that the judges who aren't on it don't show up.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing.
That's the real problem.
You should never release the pairings with the judges.
Right. Yeah, well. Then you're screwed.
And
not planned.
But I do want to say that I agree with Beats, actually, and disagree with Jim a bit on this. I think that if you – I mean, I understand the fear of having the kids stay up all night, but the reality is they do stay up all night prepping.
Yes.
And the thing is that if you knew exactly who you were hitting, at least
– once you've prepped out on them, you can go to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I mean that seriously. I mean, I can think
– Yeah, I agree.
At Yale, this was a whole thing where we took forever. I love what I do. I love debate coaching. I love all that kind of stuff. But I also like to go to sleep, right? And I want my kids to go to sleep. And this was a problem that we had at Yale as well. And I certainly don't blame the Yale tournament because I can understand the reason for not doing it. But I think posting the bracket the night before if you have elimination rounds on a separate day is actually a good thing. I think that. And we did it. And it's a side note. We did that at Bronx.
What did we do? I forget it. Yeah, we had doubles. We had doubles the night before, didn't we?
Oh, maybe you're right.
I think we did a lot in JV, but I don't think we did doubles for some reason until the next day. There was some scheduling issue. I can't remember offhand. I think you did the first out.
I didn't mean to say Yale for that. I don't know why I just said that. I apologize. But you did do the first out round.
But I mean, that wouldn't have been in our calculus. I mean, and it should be to some extent. Yeah, because if you have everybody hanging. Versus at least everybody knows. I think the bottom line would become, okay, everybody should know. I mean, it just makes more sense than not knowing. And since we're moving in that, we do it anyhow. If it's overnight, we do it overnight.
Everyone should know, too, because insofar as you do have someone in the tab room who has someone that's still in the tournament, you should make it all available because even though I don't distrust people that work in the tab rooms, just from a fairness perspective, you know, if the tab room knows, then everyone should know, at least.
Yeah, there is that sense. I mean, obviously, we're not going to act on the information, but people don't know that.
Right,
and
exactly.
Everybody has the same – there's no perceived, even inaccurately, advantage to us. We shouldn't have that. People shouldn't think that about us. I mean, if we just set it up so that it wouldn't matter, more the better. One of the things that we glanced against – was the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and it came up, and then it just immediately died down again. But I was thinking about this a lot over the last weekend. I had my tournament this last weekend, which is the breaking of all 4-2s or 5-2s at a tournament. Now, this comes from Mr. Beats having tweeted.
Yes, that was a dramatic tweet.
I think I shook the entire
LD world. I noticed
that tweet right away.
Yeah. Repeat that tweet if you would, or give us
the sense of it. I can go find it right now.
Well, we know what it says. So just, what was your point again, Mr. Beats?
There was a someone on LDDebate.org had asked what the break was like at Glenbrook's, and someone posted that it took this many speaker points in order to clear, which ended up being something like 2/3 of all 5 and 2s did clear, but you had to have averaged at least 28.4 speaker points.
I found the tweet. The tweet says, I'm sorry. This tweet is so dramatic, it needs to be shared. Beats. Considering no longer attending tournaments, at least ones that require us to fly, that do not clear all with 5-2 or 4-2 records. Just wants to share.
I mean, that just stopped me in my tracks when I read that.
I remember where I was when I got that tweet.
not since JFK the lights went out in 1943. Yes.
But I think that's – look, at my own tournament, I had to do a lot of soul searching with this. And I think I'm open to the point that you're making about 4-2 records. I definitely think 5-2 is something – that's a whole different kettle of fish, I think, than a 4-2. I think at the point where you're 5-2, because most tournaments that have 7 rounds are extremely competitive tournaments, right? So being 5-2 at a tournament like that, I think you deserve a shot at the elimination rounds. You know, some kind of runoff round is in order.
The reason why I even say 4-2 is because you still have to get your 5th win to get to that next round anyway, right? So if you add an additional break round, it's still a 5th win that is necessary to continue on. But it would just be in front of 3 judges instead of 1 judge.
Right.
And the speaker points don't matter.
On the basis of fairness and so forth and so on, I would have no objection to this. My problem is practicality.
Sure.
But when you talk about the 7-round tournaments, 7-round tournaments go on forever. They're 3-day tournaments. Uh-huh. They have the time to do it. I've been to Glenbrook's. I love the Glenbrook's tournament. Don't get me wrong. One of the things I liked about the Glenbrook's tournament is I had plenty of time to go out to dinner and all that kind of stuff. They could squeeze in and it also had the tightest, most horrifying break of any tournament I went to.
Well, it used to be that they only did 6 rounds and then broke it.
Right,
that was
probably
even,
when I was
that,
there.
That's yeah, what was I mean. That was awful.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's
it was like boom, boom, and then you went home. I mean, because it was like, I mean, we broke. I mean, we did okay, but I mean, it was. I mean, I knew. I mean, people that had virtually the same record aren't breaking. Yeah, and that's the problem. Yeah, you know, it's one thing that those speaker points being so unclear and vague and just whatever they are, as compared to you win, you win. You lose. Speaker points, you get 27 people in the room, you got 27 different versions of what speaker points ought to be. And
in fairness, and this is certainly no criticism of you, Jim, because we use a very similar scale when we run the MHL together, but even the scale that we sometimes try to propose people think about is still really not a meaningful scale because it's a 5-point range, right? It's interesting to me at the bump tournament. This should come as no surprise to those who know me. I had a results packet from 1994 of the Malcolm A. Bump tournament.
To give you the one from this year, John. I'll try to correct that next time.
But it was interesting to read through it and say, wow, you know, the speaker point variance is like, look, the top speaker had a 27. That would almost be unheard of at a really competitive bid tournament. I don't know that Madhu Ramankutty had a 27, and she was your top speaker at this tournament, your tournament this year, right? It was. I thought that was really quite fascinating, and I mean, that's not something that I didn't know. I knew that was already the issue, but this has become almost a weekly occurrence when our policy team travels with our LD team, right? Because they make jokes about how LD speaker points are inflated, right?
No question.
And I mean, it's not like policy points are perfect themselves, right? But last year, when our top speaker at the Bronx Science Tournament had almost all 30s, I mean, our policy kids kept saying, well, you know, I know this guy's good, but that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah. I mean, you look at the policy results as they're coming in, and I would say they're probably averaging 3 or 4 points lower than LD.
I think that's entirely possible.
And part of the – I remember back in the day, the ballots had these
grid.
these grids, and you got like – it was from 1 to 5, and I guess there were 6 rows, and you gave from 1 to 5 and a variety of different things.
And you'd add them up.
You added it up. And because the problem is there is no objective criteria for why we're going to give a certain number of points. I mean, experienced judges know that was good or that wasn't good. And half of the experienced judges make it up anyhow. So, you know, it's without having objective criteria, there's not much you can do. Speaker points are very problematic.
Extremely. And to me, at least for the tournaments that we fly to, my kids, you know, they have to pay for all their own travel. And I mean, and I have kids that are well off, and I'm not complaining about that. But to... For us, we're going to go to the Glenbrooks this weekend, or when we went to Yale. Two kids that were 4-2 and missed clearing. You know, they each spend over $1,000 to go, miss 2 days of school, travel on a 6-hour flight there and a 6-hour flight home, 2-hour drive to the tournament and 2-hour drive back. It's disappointing to be left out of the out rounds based on some speaker points when you've achieved the number of wins that were necessary to... clear. It's not.
I mean, that was ultimately the argument that persuaded me at my own tournament. Right? I was like, okay, let me think about how many people are coming from outside the area. These are people who are flying in at great expense. Right? If I can make the people go home at least a little happier that they at least had theoretically the shot if they were 5-2.
Well, we had the time to do it.
Yeah.
We had the 3 days. I mean. I look at Yale, and there is absolutely no reason why we couldn't do it at Yale. And I say this knowing that Palmer just collapsed in his chair at the thought of it. But
well, you can have the runoff
round
on Saturday.
In LD, what are you actually adding? You're adding, for the most part, it's not going to be a full double-flighted round, right?
You're
not
going to be a single flight.
It's going to be a single flight, probably.
We would do it. What happens is you do it at night with Yale. And I'm only particularly speaking about Yale. You do it on Saturday night at Yale. Which means that you don't have the doubles round.
The way we did it at Bronx Science.
Is the next day. And the thing is, at a place like Yale, where you have so many things going on in addition to LD and all the room adjustments, throwing in even just one more round of debate the next day and the biggest map, you know, 32 rooms or whatever, 16 rooms, whatever it is, that has a big impact on the tournament. I think it's a worthy impact, though. I mean, if a tournament like Yale, where people are flying in, and part of the attraction is I want to go see Yale, I want to do Yale, whatever, I'm willing to pay the money, I think Yale probably has a reciprocal obligation to give them something for their money, to give them the best chance of doing well at that tournament. On the other hand, for high schools, now this is just me, for me to fit in another round, and I'm thinking, you know, I run a tournament roughly the same as everybody else, except
you start 7th, and you start 7:30 a.m.
I start 7th, yes, Virginia, but I do have the a double single flighted double octaround, which helps me move things along. So now I would have a single flighted extra round here, and then a single flighted double round, and already I'm adding an hour, and it's going to be 9:30, 10 o'clock, and the problem is. And I don't even have the final. So if I throw in a final on top of that, no one's ever leaving ever.
Well,
the people have to go home.
Problem. I mean, I've actually miraculously, you know, coaching at a New York City public school, do not have this problem because we do not have to pay for use of the facility. But a lot of public schools do have to pay. Yeah, I mean, you have to pay
for use of the facility. That's why as we joke, I also like to leave early, but I am literally paying for the 5 custodians by the hour.
Sure.
And every time I look at them, I just see the money falling out of our pockets. Nice guys. Don't get me wrong. I love these guys, but they're taking the food off my table.
Yeah. No, so I think that is one thing that's to be kept in mind. I mean, we can make fair demands on a tournament, but I think that we need to keep in mind who's, you know, what the venue is, who's hosting it, what challenges do they face as well.
And the type of, like, for us, you know, if we go to the Damien tournament and there are some 4-2s that are left out, I don't really care. It's we didn't pay anything really to go to the tournament. We, you know, except for the cost of the vehicle and our entry
fee.
It's just that once it gets into the, you know, the $500, $600, $700 that you've paid plus all the missed school,
Sure.
It's
well, those are all going to be either quarters or octos, and they're going to be colleges or major high school tournaments. And I think they can do it. I think they can and probably should do it. You know, it's not costing them anything to have this round except more time. They're all making a fortune. No question about it. Nobody's having any free tournaments. They all have plenty of money to do this. It's not costing them anything. The worst thing it could possibly be costing them is some custodial fees to hold their school open for another hour. They, I think, should be doing this.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I mean, Josh Ho, the debate coach at Michigan, actually responded to my tweet on Facebook saying that in policy debate, they're looking for it. And he said even in college debate, you know, college debate already has full three-day tournaments.
They have eight-round tournaments.
And they don't know they don't know what to do either. But, you know, it's an issue. You can't really find another way to, because debate is winning and losing, and it's too much like figure skating if you have these points and things like that. Yeah.
Well,
it's,
so my question is, Beats, if we don't have speaker points, what do you propose?
I don't know. I mean, you have to. I mean, it's way more fair than opposition record.
Yeah,
or
I agree.
It's
interesting because people often say op wins, but I think that the preset thing is a deal breaker for me. The ultimate thing. I mean,
you shouldn't be punished for who you debate. You
for
can
random. Yeah, I mean,
it's
ludicrous.
Yeah, it's absolutely ludicrous to me. And then if you get rid of the presets, then everyone who's 4-2 has a very similar opposition wins number anyway in a 6-round tournament because they'll all have debated people within their bracket the whole time. So, you know, it's going to be fairly similar. And I think that the kid who goes 0-2 and then comes up the backside should have equally as good a chance as someone that goes 2-0 and is able to squeak out their last two wins at the end of the tournament too.
Definitely agreed.
There's no difference between those two people, those two debaters.
If anything, I think coming back from behind is more impressive, frankly.
Well, I don't know about that.
One of my debaters insists
that that's the better strategy.
Always lose the first round.
Well, if the tournament is putting A judges in the 2-round bracket, then use your whole tournament with A judges. So anyway,
I see that, but I don't suggest that as your.
I've always suggested that, and that my team sucks. I mean, because they listen to me. And, oh my god, I'm going to go out there and lose. Don't worry, Mr. Menick, I'll lose. No problem. Good for you, kid.
I don't know what can be done. One thing, you know, that I had posted before on LDDebate.org is just putting a scale on the ballot and asking judges to adhere to it. And that scale being 25 means this person...
I still think it should be lower.
I mean, 25 means that this person
is... You got half
is,
points, so...
25 means that this person is doesn't belong in this division. 26 means that this person debated okay. 27 means that this was a competitive round with both debaters and they, you know, could potentially break. And 28, you know, and so on. And 30 being reserved for this is the best person I've ever seen this year.
I don't get that one thing with 30. I mean, I understand why we don't want to have a proliferation of 30s, but it seems like that's a real huge jump. Like the best person I've seen all year? Maybe
well, for 30, but I mean, I didn't talk about 28. 28.5, 29, 29.5.
Okay, so we're going to break down the... Okay.
I mean,
break down the 0.5s and whatnot, I guess.
Well, I mean, you still let the judges use 0.5s, and I could even see an argument saying letting judges using 0.25s. But
people are profligate with the 30s, but not all people are profligate with the 30s.
Right.
Which really, and if you're going to give out speaker awards at the point at which people are not adhering to the same scale, it's a crapshoot. I mean, we take out, obviously, we drop the high and the low, but... You know, there's just so much you can change if you have a bizarre judge pool.
Well, it's a total crapshoot because at the Glenn Brooks, when we do our strike sheet, we might give a good judge a low rating just because they, give more miserly points? Are there more
miserly points? I mean, I would go with and that's, my kid. I look at somebody, and if I know my kid has an opportunity to get, you know, a speaker award, I will strike or low-rate judges that I know give bad speaker
points. Even if they're good judges, and that's too bad.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I know they'll give the right decision. I mean, we all know judges like this, and they're fine judges, but we don't really want them judging our kids because they're going to hit them on the speaker points.
You know what's interesting? People say that nobody will pay attention to that kind of scale, but or to a suggested scale, but I don't think that's true. In my experience, it's actually been adhered to pretty well. One scale that was more dramatic was, I remember, this was it wasn't quite a few years back, but it was a number of years back. I was at the Lone Star Round, what became the Lone Star Round Robin, when I was still in L.A. at Immaculate Heart. And they had a scale that was really quite dramatic. It was like 10 to 30, right? And the speaker points became far more spread out, but I really felt that they became more meaningful. I mean, there was a real set guy. And the other tournament, here's a real blast from the past, Pat Fitch's Chesapeake Bay Invitational had a really well-enforced speaker point scale. And I just thought that it was interesting. People say it can't be done. It can be done.
Well, I don't think – I'm not comfortable with there being – like, I'm not really comfortable with going and talking to the judge after the round.
Well, that's – no, but that isn't what – when I said well-enforced, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that literally Pat Fitch was saying, like, you justify this 27.5 right now.
Yeah.
I don't mean that. I just mean that he really gave a detailed thing of, here's what we think at this tournament the speaker points should mean. And it was on every ballot.
I think people would follow it if we if you made an effort to say, at the opening assembly, on the ballots, at the ballot table, just please be cognizant of the points you're giving.
Right. Here, it has a definite effect on the tournament.
I like what Mike was saying before. I mean, this is like, person doesn't belong in tournament. Person probably should break. I think, you know, some kind of thing like that sums it up in a sort of vague way. But it also vague, but also very meaningful. I mean, I know exactly what that means. If you can come up with like five different possibilities, no more than five, because that's all you really need, and it would sort itself out.
I think it would. It couldn't be worse than what we have, right?
No,
where it's complete. I mean, it's not completely random because the same kids win speaker awards, right?
Yeah,
but
not random.
But I will say that when someone gets better. Or when someone has more, I mean, reputation plays a huge deal in speaker awards.
No, I agree.
I think that, I mean, last year, Sean Nadal was the first thing he said to me when we got to, you know, he was in semis of Blake and he hadn't really done anything before that. He said, semis of Blake is worth 2 speaker points every round after this. And he was right. He started getting speaker awards, having never gotten a speaker award before.
Where the points matter is at the lower ends of the 4-2s and stuff like that.
I mean,
that's where the points become.
Well, or for speaker awards.
Speaker awards, I think, actually do play out, that people do always get. It's the same speakers all the time. But, you know, there's another 90 people in the tournament.
Right.
And 10 or 15 of those are the ones where the speaker points, they're not that, you know, they're the ones who are going to get hurt because we don't have every 4-2 breaking, and so they're at the low end of that 4-2 because one person gave them, you know, or two people, you know, gave them crappy points.
And I guess felt as though the judging pool were adhering to some scale of speaker points, I would be more comfortable traveling to tournaments that don't clear 4-2s or 5-2s. I mean, 5-2 is tough, but, you know, that don't clear 4-2s and 5-2s. If I knew. But I'm looking at the judging pool for the Glenn Brooks, and love the Glenn Brooks, love Tara, and, you know, I've been to that tournament every year since 1995. Love the tournament. However, looking at the judge pool this year, there are I don't know half the judges in there. So, and I don't know that they don't know what the speaking point range is and those sorts of things. And I don't know, you know, if it just, it's such a high, it becomes more high stakes, not just because of the TOC bids, but because how much money and how much school we're missing because of it.
Well, I think, again, I'm going to go back to a 7-round tournament. And I'm a recent convert on this, but I really think that 7-round tournaments should have a runoff. I mean, it just, at that point, if you're having 7 rounds, if your field is that competitive, you got it, and that large, you got to.
I mean, I was the one on the LD committee back in the mid-90s that really pushed for us to do a runoff round. And I even said, you know, my argument was even, don't even give a trophy for it. It doesn't matter. The kids, for those kids, the trophy isn't what matters. It's just that chance to get into the eliminations. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I think we've.
That was good. That was actually a pretty good range.
We didn't get all that far in the PD. Okay. All right. The what is our tech moment here?
Google. It's Google.
Google. Google. Yeah.
So who would have thought? I mean, that sounds like the low end. What's Google? Right. Don't they celebrate Sesame Street? Google. So Google has a couple of features that I think. We all know, maybe we don't all know about that. A lot of people know about them. A lot of people use them. I don't know that all debate teams use them as effective as they can. So specifically, I'm thinking about two things that Google provides as a free service. One is a Google group, which is a listserv that has a lot of other functions built into it.
It doesn't have a calendar built into it.
It doesn't automatically have a calendar built into it.
No, I don't like that. The Yahoo Groups does have calendars built into it.
I admittedly never used my calendar when Bronx Sense was on the Yahoo Group. That is a good point. And I think that hopefully Google will integrate its very good Google Calendar. I love the Google Calendar.
I like the Google Calendar, but I like having a calendar for my group.
Sure.
I've used both groups. I mean, that's the only distinction I have seen. I think, actually, there is probably more functionality, in the Google.
Oh, definitely more functionality.
In the Google, but, this is an important functionality. I'll set, deadlines. You got to sign up for the tournament by whatever, and it sends little notices that whatever's getting close. And like I said, it's just built in.
I never knew that the Yahoo group did that. I'm going to be honest. I used a Yahoo group for a long time. But...
that's why no one met their deadlines.
Fair enough. That's probably true, actually, come to think of it. However, what it does integrate well is your ability to share certain Google documents and whatnot, thanks to and for those of you who do not know what a Google document is, a Google document is – this ties into the notion of like cloud computing and whatnot, right? It's a document that exists online that you can share with people, but you can also edit remotely from different computers and edit the file together. Right. So, for example, you could have an internal case list, as it were. You could have a list of what everybody is running, and people can contribute. They can edit this massive block for each case and whatnot. I like to think of it as being useful also just for practical things, like beyond just debate arguments. We do our tournament signups on a Google Doc. This is really good and better than the Yahoo tournament signup that I used to use, which was the table on Yahoo, because
tables, right? Yahoo.
But the thing is that sometimes it's hard to delete your entry, right? If somebody has decided now I'm dropping from the tournament, that can be a little bit annoying on the Yahoo group, but it's very easy on the Google document. I find that signing up stuff on the spreadsheet is extremely effective. It's easy for the coach to organize by name, by tournament, etc. We have one massive tournament sign-up sheet that I add tournaments to as the year goes on. Kids sign up for them. Everybody's happy. Keeps it very organized and very easy to use. I find it's also very helpful in terms of policy tournaments, because on our team, at least, we have a lot of novices, and sometimes when you're a novice, your partnerships are a little bit more fluid and whatnot, and it's keeps it easier to keep track of who's debating with who at which tournament throughout the year. So I find that sharing those kinds of things with the Google group is really, really effective. The other thing that I would say about Google groups is that and I could just be wrong about this with Yahoo, but Yahoo's sort of floundering on some level, and it seemed like their maintenance of the Yahoo groups had really kind of vanished. Like nothing was changing on the Yahoo groups. So while Menick is correct that the calendar is not as well integrated right now, the fact that it seems that Google is constantly tinkering with its stuff leads me to believe that the Google group functionality will just continue to go forward for the time being. Does that make sense, right? Like that, like it seemed like Yahoo was kind of ignoring its groups after a while.
Yeah, I mean, talking about what Yahoo is up to is a mug's game. I mean, really. So, I mean, you're right. They haven't changed anything. What their concentration is for the future, one does not know. I mean, there's nothing about groups that says Yahoo.
Sure.
So, You know, Yahoo's big thing is mail. I mean, that is their number one thing. That's where they got all the numbers. You know, they make Google pale by comparison. But, you know, who knows? But, I mean, I use Yahoo because I had it in Yahoo. You know, the one thing I really like about Google is the RSS.
Sure. I use the Google Reader.
I love the Google Reader. And that's always getting new functions. I think what we need to do actually is talk about RSS in a different podcast altogether, because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about there. But I do like, I mean, for people who already know what RSS is and do use it, I love the Google Reader. It's the easiest one. It's the easiest one to train new people on, because I do it in my office.
Actually, at the Kentucky National Debate Institute this summer, Mike Washer, who is working with the Public Forum Group, gave a really compelling lecture about Google Reader as something to think about in terms of managing current events research. And so, I think that's...
what I do is I just subscribe to a Google alert based on the current Lincoln Douglas debate topic.
I have to interrupt and say something about the Google alert. Somebody who shall remain nameless, who is a colleague of mine, also subscribes to the Google alert as the Bronx High School of Science typed in, and Jim Menick's blog came up on it, where Jim Menick said that the New York City Invitational is being renamed the Baby Cakes Invitational. This was a joke about the Vassar Round Robin that after a while only Menick found funny, but no, I'm just kidding. But apparently
I'm only trying to entertain myself. That's fine.
Fair enough. This colleague of mine actually believed this article, because it came up in the Google Reader, and I guess it was free of the context of it being Jim Menick's blog, and this person didn't take the time to notice that. So I got an email that was CC'd to my principal asking, is this really true that you are renaming the tournament the Baby Cakes Invitational? What does this mean for Bronx science? This is a serious tournament. And I thought that was one of the more surreal moments. But anyway.
On the last topic, you know, I created a Google alert for... standardized exit exam, standardized test, standardized, you know, I create a Google alert and then I just get an email, and I would get them daily. I would get a daily email that listed all the things that Google had indexed from the day in news and whatever.
That's a good thing.
That's mentioned it. And so, you know, when we get close to the TOC, I'll start updating politics dis ads and things like that. And so I'll get Google alerts on things that have to do with, you know, political capital and things like that to try to, or certain regions of the world. I think last year I did International Criminal Court and Sudan and all those things just to get, just to make sure that we would be up to date. And I guess when it got closer to tournament time, I changed my preferences to get an email immediately when the news story would come up and not just be a daily thing. So.
Very policy of you.
Yeah, I mean, the Google alert is I admittedly have my own name whenever it shows up online. I get an alert saying that my name has shown up somewhere.
Start writing about you and baby cakes.
It was really the most surreal experience.
All right, what is our, we'll talk
Well,
more
does anyone use Google Wave? Yeah, I have it. I've had it
I just
for a
got
long
an
time.
Invite. I haven't looked at it yet.
Maybe we can... My assistant debate coach, Peter Van Elswick, said it would be a great way to do team things because it's made for projects. So,
I mean, when I was looking at it when it was first announced, I was thinking of it for my office for ways of doing stuff for the internet, how we'd collect information and then collaborate and put it on. But I guess I haven't looked at it yet in any depth.
Yeah, I don't know how to use it at all, but it would be cool maybe if we maybe we can play around. Cruz, do you have one?
I can get one.
Well, you'll get in. Somebody will invite you someday.
Someday you'll be in the cool group, John.
Sit by the computer, ouch, and you know, maybe I'll have the people's champion send you an invitation. Okay. Anyway, what are the predictions for the coming weekend, if any?
Okay, well, I have been authorized by the senior most assistant coach Doug Jeffers to admit that. When we were not doing preparation for this tournament, we were doing a massive amount of research about area restaurants. And I know that while others are scurrying about to the dodgeball game, we'll have a prediction about that in a moment, we will be feasting.
Are you going to have Sophie with you?
Well, that's my question to you. Is Sophie going to be...
Sophie doesn't feast. Okay, for that's people true. Who don't know who Sophie is, Sophie's on my team. Her nickname is the Panivore because all she eats is bread. And when I say that all she eats is bread, I mean all she eats is bread. I mean, you take her anywhere and she'll bring a bagel with her. You know, it's as simple as the best restaurant in the world. Take her to Barcelona.
She's kind of the nibbler.
Infusing everything.
The bagel and nibbles.
Forget it. You know, she eats a bagel. You took her to Au Bon Pain. She thought she was in heaven. Oh, my God. She had never been there before. She went to Yale, Au Bon Pain. She said, oh, my God, that's the best place I've ever been. Anyway, you're stuck with her. Thank you for taking her.
I'm happy to take her. I promise we won't
abandon
her.
Where are you
going to
eat?
I don't have the list in front of me. We did choose a couple of restaurants, and I was actually going to post them online ahead of time on the tournament after I made my reservations to share some of the fine places.
I would recommend anyone that is going to be in the – well, actually anywhere in the country, but a former debater from New Trier, R.J. Melman, his family owns a bunch of restaurants in the Let Us Entertain You group, and last year when we were in Chicago, we ate at a place called Hub 51. He got us in for a late reservation. It's downtown, and he actually sat and ate with our team, and then afterwards took us on a tour of Chicago. Very, very, very nice. I mean, he's probably in his – I think he debated for New Trier in the mid-early 90s, and that was actually an Illinois State champion. Yeah, the Let Us Entertain You group has a bunch of good restaurants. Hub 51 was great downtown
Where
Chicago.
Downtown Chicago, right?
Yeah, it's downtown. Yeah, familiar. It's a great place down there, so I would recommend that.
I will post our restaurant list. I just think Hub 51 that really is ringing a bell.
Probably because we were raving about it last year.
That must have been why. Well, I think that the only other prediction I have besides eating well is this dodgeball game is going to be sounds like it's going to be pretty epic. I know that the Bronx science policy debaters are taking this very, very seriously.
I think Bill Cooper's playing. Does anyone have a prediction on how that will turn out?
Okay, Bill, don't take that laugh personally. I'm telling you right now, Andrew Markoff is taking this seriously. Our policy debater, Andrew Markoff, is going for blood at this, and that should be interesting. Now, Matt Ross, Carolyn Clinton, and Bobby Esnard, I can't really picture that that trio going for it. So
I've always said if you're over the age of 12, you cannot play dodgeball unironically. Therefore, I don't participate in dodgeball or kickball.
Well, on that note, I think we're almost up to an hour.
Whoa.
So.
That's awesome.
That's pretty awesome. Actually, I think we're over.
No.
I got a little timer here, but we're close. We're damn close, and if we keep talking about how long
57 minutes,
we're talking,
50 seconds. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
It really will be an hour. So, we should take next week off. It's a holiday, and we'll be back. I think what we should do when we come back the week after Thanksgiving is actually talk about the new topic.
That's a great
whatever
idea.
Whatever it is. So,
I'm rooting for HIPCs.
God, it's so weird for me to think that is going to be the new. Okay, that's going to be very exciting.
We'll know when we know. We shall know when we know. So I will see you guys. Have a good holiday.
You have a good holiday as well.
And we'll be talking again in a couple of weeks.
Bye now.
Great. Bye. Yeah.